Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
You got to stack so many good days and months and years. Anyone that can have that sustained level of success and adapt and be in different environments and they continue to bring you around and you continue to win, it doesn't happen on accident.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Ben Peterson, head coach of the Perry Lakes Hawks in Australia. Peterson has built his career across the international and professional levels with assistant roles at the Perth Wildcats, Philadelphia 76ers, and the Otago Nuggets before stepping into his current head coaching position. His background gives him a strong perspective on player development and team building across different levels of the game. In this episode, we discuss how young coaches can earn more responsibility early in their careers, a deeper look into player development on the international level, and how veteran players can play a key role in helping lead and stabilize a program.
Welcome back, everybody. We are back with another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, as always, joining us today. We're excited. We have the head coach, Perry Lake Hawks, all the way across the pond, coming to us from Australia. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Peterson. Coach Peterson, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate you guys for having me.
No, you got it, man. Welcome. Yeah, glad we can make this work. I know it's a 12-hour time difference, so we appreciate the adjustment on your part, for sure.
I got to say, especially for this, too, I think it's great because there's a lot of people out there that could listen, that could learn from this. You're a young head coach, I should say, over the NBL 1 West League. I know you guys obviously are in season right now, for those that don't know, so this is a hot time for you, but you're a young head coach. You've had some great experiences growing and a fast rise in the industry. I'm sure there's a lot of great stories that you're going to have, but to give everybody like a quick background, you had the from video and development roles all the way. Then you ultimately go into an assistant coach position. Now where you're at head coaching position, all of that behind the scenes work, right? Those positions, those large responsibilities. What do you think you consistently did in those, we'll say, video coordinator, those development roles early on in your years, before we even get to where you're at now, what you got going on, what do you think you did consistently that made people not only trust you, but give you more responsibility over the years? Because that, I feel, is a big question a lot of people ask now, is how do I get more responsibility and how do I get the trust of my staff? So what would you say for that?
Yeah, no, great question. I started my first year with the Perth Wildcats as a unpaid video guy. I wouldn't even say I was the main video coordinator. You're coding practice, you're in the background, you'll stat it afterwards. Maybe you're on the floor pre and post, kind of helping guys out. And first and foremost, you want to get your main job done, which is the film, and make sure you don't mess that up. That's most important. And then I just think being around was the biggest thing. Like I moved out to Australia to do the job. I was all in on being a coach. I'm all in on being a coach. And once I would finish my role of video, it would be kind of like, how can I add value from there? So we had three assistants at the time, and the flexibility of the video role is I don't have anyone I oversee and I don't run offense or defense. So I can kind of float, or I could kind of float. And so it's just every day, hey, what do you guys need? What do you guys need? And I'm bothering them. And over time, as you build that trust, like it's all the work they don't want to do, right? It's hell yeah, hey, go do the busy work here. Yeah, clip this up for me and trim it or whatever. And it's the tedious tasks, but trying to do that to the highest level, like you're the one that's going to present it. And then as you gain that trust, I just started to slowly operate as if I was an assistant. I would do a scout that week and I'd present it to the assistant like, hey, I've got all these play calls. I've got it working. I'll take whatever you want. So I kind of was proactive in that sense and try to do more than necessarily what my role stated.
Proactive. Great work.
You know, and you hit two more, and I'm sure people, when they listen to this, proactive, big word, willing, another big word, and the third big word, which is, I think, the key one, is add value, because you were trying to find ways to add value and elevate the people above you, being a servant in a way, because you weren't really overseeing anybody, right? And I think that's one thing that young coaches, as they get into this profession, you're usually reaching up as you're trying to grow, and then you're reaching across and collaborating more in the, as you get more into your career. And then hopefully at some point, which you're at that situation now already, but as a head coach, you're reaching down and you're trying to give back to other people, because as you give, reach down and help others that are working, I hate to say for you, but with you, then they're going to make you better by default. If as a head coach, you're trying to help them. So there's that reaching up, reaching across, reaching down. But you, those three words are huge. And that what our profession gets caught in sometimes is everybody wants to rise without the responsibility. Like, how fast can I rise? But don't make me do too much. And that's, I'm so glad you said that, because you've got to be willing to throw yourself in the fire if you want those rewards like that. And that sometimes doesn't even guarantee you'll get them. But you got to be willing to throw yourself out there and throw yourself in the fire like you did. So great stuff just from the jump.
Now, I want to make sure to bring up, you said I'm all in, which if there's anybody I wouldn't question, it's the person who packs up from the States, moves all the way across the world to go to Australia to be, yeah, you're all in. I can understand that fully.
Yeah. Like that, Coach, you said throw yourself in the fire. Yeah. If you're going to make that move, you kind of got to, you got to go for it, right? Like you're not going to be like, oh, that task is too small, or no, I don't want to do it. You moved out here. This is what you want to do. If you're all in. And I feel like a lot of people say, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. No, you really have to be all in, no matter what that really consists of.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because that's a long plane flight to be second guessing yourself once that thing takes off the ground. You got about 18 hours to be second guessing yourself, and that's not good. So you definitely want to be all in. No, so glad you said that, man. So glad you said that.
And especially with you, you have a unique experience because you have been not only Australia, New Zealand, and then, of course, NBA environments and over in the States, right? Was there anything that really sticks with you now, looking back on them all? Obviously, Australia is where you're at. Previously, New Zealand, and then NBA was more in the earlier. I can't even say earlier in your career because you're still a young guy, but earlier in your career. With those environments, you've seen some different things. Is there anything that you took from those that you still utilize that still really you carry with?
Yeah, definitely. The NBA is, it was brief. It was a brief deal in Summer League, but just being around an organization, it's one of the 30 best in the world, right? So the resources, the planning, the execution, like just the detail of everything was so high level. And so you take that to here where, like, I view the NBA as one of the better leagues in the world. But you just don't have the same level of resourcing and staffing that you do in the NBA, and nowhere in the world has that. So like, how can you be as detailed, and like you're picking up roles that necessarily it's not in your job description, but it's a small staff. It's not as well funded of an organization. So how can you operate on like an elite level without having that funding? So little things that I saw, like one of the things, and this is an example of being proactive, is I was with the Sixers and you spend a couple weeks with them and talk about how their video guys do things. One of the things they did was for every team that had a late game edit of what that team did, ATO, whether it's getting the ball inbounds, game winning plays, and then who they wanted to foul. And so we didn't have that in Perth. So I took it upon myself. I think that would be my first year in the video room of like, all right, I'm going to go through the last 2 years of every team in our league. This is what they want to do, ATO, like their common actions. This is what they go to when the game's on the line, when they have to get the ball unbounded, and these are the guys we want to foul. And there's been a couple moments where there's 20 seconds left, they call their timeout, and I got the iPad right there, and our staff. So you're just trying to prepare for everything. And 9 out of 10 times probably doesn't have an impact, but you're just trying to be ready for that 1 out of 10 times where maybe you have an impact on the game. So like those little moments and the detail in the organization, like that definitely left a – like I remembered that for sure.
Yeah. Now, that's one thing about that league, man. Whenever they put those three letters on something, it's going to be buttoned up. There's no doubt. Even something like Summer League, you would think at that time of year that it's somewhat, you'd like to say, relaxed. And maybe for some of the executives it is. Obviously, they're hanging out and having meetings and all that stuff. But just having a chance to be around the Summer League team, that's one of the best young intern experiences that any coach can have, because you want to talk about seeing the guts of the inside of what's going on and There's so much more to meet the eye. What we see in the NBA in terms of, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg, but there's, like you said, the attention to detail down the one person's job is just to make sure everybody gets the coffee. You would think it seems that way, but there's just this one person's job. Like, all right, that's it. That's all he does. Yeah. But that coffee, it better be right.
Oh, yeah.
Usually it is.
They're on point.
Everything. Yeah.
Fast forwarding a little bit, because obviously the one thing that we really want to shed light on and talk about is what's going on right now, right? You being, as I said, you're in season right now, so this is the heat of it all. This is your first year as a head coach over there. Going from the previous assistant, various assistant positions you've had, and then stepping into a head coaching role, this is the question that everybody typically asks, right? Okay, going that 6 inches, how much harder is it? What more responsibility do I have? Yeah, there's a loaded amount of questions. But stepping into the head coaching role, what did you feel? So seeing all these different programs, taking these different opportunities to go internationally, what do you feel you were most prepared for? Because everybody always says that they were not prepared for a lot of things, like new things get thrown at you. Was there anything that you were like, I am 100%, I was ready for this one?
100%. I don't know if I can say I'm 100%. That would be crazy. Yeah, no, I don't 85%. Think I can say
85%.
Yeah. We'll say 60. I was like, everyone's all it's about managing people. And I think the guy I work for here in Perth, John Riley, is like one of one when it comes to managing people in a group. So I had a feeling of, okay, like the X's and O's are great. You want to obviously be a lead at that side of it, but it really is managing people, managing personalities, keeping those 12 guys happy, plus whatever development guys you have around. Now, do I do it at a really high level? Probably not right now or not yet. I anticipated having to be able to do it for sure. And that's what I'm navigating right now. But yeah, it's just so different. Like when you're really the man in the arena, it's just, you go from being the guy that's making the suggestions to the guy that's making the decisions. And it's a lot easier to be the guy throwing a million suggestions at the head coach. But now when you really got to act on it, is it really that good of a year? It's way easier on the other side.
What was your first? I always love to ask this question because I remember mine. It's so clear. But what was your first head coaching moment? And it could be something that you did well, or it could be something where it was like, oh, damn, I've gone from the freaking city driving to the freeway now. Like when you first get your driver's license, it's that feeling.
That's a scary step.
People are flying out here. It's like, that's to me is like my first head coaching moment out of just full transparency, playing against Gardner Webb. And it was my very first home game at Charlotte. And it was a back-to-back. So we actually played Gardner Webb on a Friday night. And we played South Carolina State on a Saturday night, which you never really hear of in college basketball. But it was like a scheduling snafu that had happened, like in the coaching change or something. They had to get the games done. So it's my first year, and literally my first two games are back-to-back. Three guys were suspended for having a little funny grass experience back in the previous spring. So two starters were suspended, and then another guy off the bench was suspended for my first two home games. And Gardner Webb comes out, and Chris Holtman was the coach, and they were really good at the time, and they come out and they pick and rolled us to death. It was one of those things where like, I was behind the whole game. I was a step behind, but I just remember that first time out, like, okay, this is really different, man. And I can't really describe it except for the city driving, freeway driving feeling. But what was yours? Like, cause you always have that one thing that kind of hits you and you're like, holy cow.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I've had plenty. I think the best one is our round three game. It was the reigning champs at their place. They're like a regional team, so it's a 6-hour bus ride. I think they've lost something like 5 games at home in 5 years or something ridiculous. And their round one game got canceled due to weather, so it became banner night all of a sudden in round three. So we had to go up there on their banner night, sold out crowd. We didn't have our two imports in town yet, so we had a depleted group, and they kind of go on a little run, and the place is rocking. I had to take my first time out, and man, like, we're in it right now. Like, keep this team together. That's what it was. You have a couple moments, but that was real right there. Everyone's looking at you. So yeah, no, I've had several moments, but that's one I don't think I'll forget for a long time, is having to go up there and deal with that atmosphere.
I told you before we signed on, the best part about year ones as a head coach is there's never another year one, right? So the best part about that first time you jump on the freeway and you're doing barely 60 because you're just trying to stay in that right lane and hold it together, and everybody else is flying past you doing 78, the freeway never gets faster than it does the very first time. It's never, it never gets. So what you're going through right now, it's just going to continue to slow down from here. Now you're just saying, yeah, you sure about that? No, trust me, I'm sure. But the freeway is never faster than that very first time. You need those kind of moments to kind of give you some calluses. So you know that, because there'll be other teams that go on a run, hopefully not on their banner night, but there'll be other teams where you're on the road and it's hostile. But you need that stuff to kind of, that's how you get the skin a little bit weathered to go through it.
Oh yeah. We've seen some dudes speeding, coach. They've been speeding by us.
Just taking a nice stroll on the freeway. You got people.
Yeah, flying. We're staying in that right lane. We're
going right. Just hang on, man. Yeah. Where's the next exit so we can hit a rest area? Yeah, that's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
No, I couldn't even imagine. I feel like, and I know Mage always would say this too, like the timeout seems shorter. They seem like they go 10 times quicker once you call one. I'm sure the crowd sounds like it gets a little louder. Is there anything, maybe any advice that you would have for anybody going into one of their opportunities? This is going to be their first time being a head coach. Okay, you haven't gone through a full season, but you have gone through enough of it where I'm sure you've experienced it well enough. Is there any advice that maybe you'd give to people going through those first, oh crap, here it is moments?
Yeah, no, great question. I think it's the same as my assistant coaching role as well. And this is the advice my boss gave me, is like, all you can do is just be authentically yourself, and you got to stick to what you believe in. As soon as your group feels that you sway one way or another, you're doubting yourself or you're not being yourself, I think you lose them. And I think that's what I've done a good job of so far, or at least I hope I have done a good job of so far, is I can only be me and I go about it in my way. And I've got my style of play and processes I believe in. And I think we've stuck to it. And in tough moments, we've doubled down on it. And I think that's the way you got to proceed with it.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah, no, the number one thing is being yourself and being authentic, because everything else will spill from that. And we joke about this all the time on this pod about how sharp players are. And obviously now at the professional level, guys are even sharper. But even at the college level, their ability to sense either if we're really rocking with them as an assistant supporting them, or as a head coach, if you're really standing on what you believe, or they just have these antennas that are elite as far as just knowing when it's real and when it isn't. And that's why we have to double down on, as coaches, being legitimate as far as what we believe and what we feel, and making sure they feel why we do what we do. And that, yeah, you want to win some games, but I'm trying to help you max out as a human being along the way as well. And when they feel that, then that helps you get through the tough times, because they say, hey, you know what? Things might not be going everything the way we want right now, but the guy in charge, we believe in him. And it sounds like you've set that tone there, which is great. And knowing your dad, I'm not the least bit surprised, because you come from some good coaching stock there.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's the one thing I really would say is, and off of your point, people, you're around them so much that they can understand when you're being yourself and when you're not. I forget who it was, but at this point we've had, what, 260 some episodes. So it's like, I start to forget who said what, but at one point I remember we did hear going into something when you're talking with your players, if you're your authentic self, they will feel it, they will not. But at some point, they're going to understand when you're, exactly what Mate said, they're going to understand when you're rocking with them, when you're going to be 100% in their corner, if you're backing them. And then that's ultimately going to get flipped, because if you're backing them, they're going to start backing you through the thick and the thin. And then that's when you got to be able to lose with guys before you can win with guys. So I haven't been a head coach, but I can only feel it just from enough stories. But let's talk about the development side, because internationally, obviously, that is a huge piece, is the development side. You've been through some great programs. You've been on the international side. Obviously, the NBA, they're phenomenal in the development side as well. But is your guys' development plan, the player development plan, Is it different than what you've seen in the States?
Yes and no. I think like the style of play is very much like concept based. It's not going to terminate necessarily with an isolation. It's not guys really getting into bad guys. There's one or two guys, yeah, that will get into their bag. But like for the most part, it's read and react. It's decision making. It's super simple. And I think we doubled down on that with Perth in terms of guys have all these deficiencies and you're in the NBL for a reason. You're a really good player, but whether it's mental or it's physical, like there's a limiting factor that's keeping you from being EuroLeague or NBA or whatever it is. And so rather than being like, these are all the things you're not great at, we really just try to focus on one or two things where you can be elite. And, you know, that's how you get on the floor. That's how you contribute. And that's how everything is focused. So your film is focused around that. Your on the floor stuff is focused around that. Your role in the game, that is your role. And the guys that buy into that, they succeed. And the guys that don't, they struggle. And from a day-to-day perspective, it's probably pretty boring. There's no magic pill. It's just, are you going to show up every single day and do these small little things and keep ticking it over? And we have an 18-year vet, Jesse Wagstaff, who's done nothing but win and be successful. And he does the same exact thing every day. And if you watch him every day, it's the most boring routine. He's on time every day. He's early. He's super early. He goes to weights. He gets his shots up. He plays hard. He recovers. He goes home and then he does it again and again, which a lot of guys can't do that because it's boring or they want to mix it up. No, he just does it every single day and he's won 6 championships and he's going into year 18. It's being around those kind of guys. It's nothing special.
Yeah. Now, you know what I love about what you just said there is professionalism. That's what that is, right? Like that DeAndre Jordan just won teammate of the year here in the NBA. And he's with the Pelicans and people probably forgotten where he ended up. Obviously, he's part of Lob City back in the day with the Clippers and all that. But like teammate of the year. And he actually had a hilarious thing on Instagram because it shows him like how he won teammate of the year and he's in his backyard like practicing his cheers. It's like one of the funniest things you ever see. So if you get a chance to watch it, but again, he's a multi-year guy, championship, I believe. He was with the Nuggets when they won. Yep. And so he understands the value of winning. Conversations, there's just certain conversations when guys are professionals, you just don't have to have with them because they get it. Yep. And the biggest thing, it sounds like the gift that he's giving your team is professionalism. And that's just being great at the simple, right? Like guys talk about the biggest deal about being on time. I'm there 10 minutes or 15 or whatever, but like pros, it's nothing for them to be in the building an hour and a half before things get rolling. That's like nothing to them because part of being early is getting your mind in the building. It's not so much getting your body ready for whatever you have to, the first thing you have to do. It's getting your mind in the building. That's the value of being early, which is one of the first lessons of professionalism. So it's how good is it to have a guy like that around that can just, you know, and the ones that pick up and steal from him are going to be fine. The other guys that think, oh, this is dumb. Why is he doing the same thing every day? Okay. It might cost you 4 or 5 years on the back end of your career, but it didn't cost him because he's in year 18.
Oh yeah. And like the DeAndre Jordan example, like people can look and be like, oh, how does he's in his whatever 14th year. That doesn't just accidentally happen. You got to stack so many good days and months and years. That's incredibly, anyone that can have that sustained level of success and adapt and be in different environments and they continue to bring you around and you continue to win. It doesn't happen on accident. And it's not just this magic deal. Like it's every single day.
Yeah, no doubt, man. There's something to be said for vet value. I call that vet value. When you have those guys in the locker room that just, we were talking about this on a pod just recently, actually one of our roundtables. If you had the ability as you're going through this, you know, portal situation, would it make sense to specifically take a kid that's like a 5th year or 6th year college basketball player just for that reason?
Yeah.
And just knowing like, look, man, you're not going to play much. But your maturity right now for what we're building, it's going to be worth 50,000, 75,000, 100 grand or whatever you give that guy or lady. It's interesting to wonder if that mentality will bleed into the college level. But enough about college level. We're talking NBA right now.
So. You have more than enough veterans at that level too. But Having a veteran on any team, especially in your league, I'm sure it definitely, it sets, it's the culture starter, right? It's like having an upperclassman senior, fifth year senior who does exactly what he has to do off the floor. Okay. Obviously he has a routine. He does what he needs to do. He's there every day. He's early. Do you see that trickle into the other guys that he's around?
Yeah. Like we have a really young group outside of him. Like we have a couple vets, but they're elite at like bringing those young guys along. When we do, like, we'll do a ton of stay ready days where it's 3-on-3, 4-on-4. Like, they'll attend those and watch. And because they understand if we're going to win at a high level, like, these guys got to be there with us. Otherwise, we're not going to get it done. So, yeah. And the young guys are who they are. And that's a different battle in terms of trying to get them to figure out how to be pros. But our vets are elite at bringing them along with them and pushing them in the right direction. And I'd say our young guys do a really good job of responding to that. We've got a very good group.
No, that does wonders for the locker room too, man. Yeah, there's some guys that have to go through them before they get to you sometimes.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm sure they've handled plenty of things we don't even know about.
Exactly. Which is a good thing. That's a good thing.
Well, Coach Peterson, what we'll do is we'll get to a hot seat segment, which is just a couple questions. Puts you on the hot seat if it's not warm enough for you right now in season. we'll crank it up a little bit more. Really just a couple questions. Basically what we've been doing, but switch it up a little bit. These questions are more towards everything that we have covered early on, but then also in your head coaching career. But number one, just out of everything, assistants, a head coach, the various roles that you have held, what do you feel is the most underrated part of coaching? One thing that people maybe don't give enough credit to, or you would say it's an underrated part.
I would say like before I got into being like a legit assistant, like I don't think I personally valued how much people managing it is. It truly is your relationship with the players. If you can be great X's and O's wise, like if your team doesn't enjoy being around you or you can't relate to them, especially as pros, it's really tough to get anything done or be successful. I'm nowhere near being the smartest dude in the room. So I'm trying my best to have that relationship with the guys. And I think that's where I've found success. And I really do believe like that's the way to go about it.
Yeah, 100%.
Couldn't agree more, yeah. And then we'll go, next one would be, what do great teams have that you feel that average teams do not? So really, what's that separating factor for a team?
I would say it's a combination of sacrifice and just like everyday guys. And by everyday guys, it's what we just touched on. Like you're on time, you're doing all the little things, all those daily habits. If you can accumulate as many of those kind of dudes as possible in your locker room, you're going to be successful. Like in our league, the teams that have won it the last 3 or 4 years, if you go down the list of their roster, probably had the most everyday guys. Like it wasn't necessarily the most talented team that won it. Talented teams got to the Final Four, maybe got to that grand final series, but the team that had the most everyday guys on paper is usually the one that comes out and wins it. Now you do have to have be talented. I'm not saying you don't, but as if you can surround those super talented guys with 8 dudes that bring it every single day, or your talented guys are that dude, you're in a really good spot.
No, that last one you just said right there, that's how you get to the end of the end. When your talented guys are also everyday guys, that's you can climb the ladder with those dudes. That's the way it works. That's why it's winning so hard. So, no, that's great stuff.
No question. Yeah, like you definitely have to have the non-negotiables. So then what are your non-negotiables for a head coach?
I think competing. It's so easy to say competing, but the way that we, enforce it or promote it is we track everything. Everything is competitive. If it's an on-O drill, it's competitive. If it's a live drill, it's competitive. We track it, we stat it, and we have it on the wall every single day. So you know who's winning and who's losing every single day. And the funny thing about it is the guys that you end up playing are usually the guys that consistently win. Guys just find a way. Winners just continue to win. But you get to the end of the month every month, it's the same 5 dudes. And those are also the 5 dudes that you usually play the most minutes. So it kind of works itself out. And then I think our style of play promotes competing. We're really big on the possession game, and part of that's taking care of the ball and talent, but also there's no talent involved in going and getting on a loose ball or grabbing an offensive rebound. That's competing and having competitive stamina. So I think I'd have to say competing.
I want to say too off of that, if you have exactly to your point, how it all boils out and you can see who's winning on a day-to-day basis and they're usually the ones playing. If you have a player who is losing on a consistent basis, but he's your starting, we'll just say hypothetically, a starting point guard, but he's losing on a consistent basis, and he's in that loss column all the time, do you really want him as your starting point guard if he's not competing to try and get to the top or any position? But you really want that guy out there? Can you rely on him in the fourth quarter when there's 2 minutes left? This guy doesn't care about if he loses in practice. Do you really think he cares about losing right now? It does work itself out, but at the same point, it says a lot about their mentality and approach to it as well.
Yeah. They're both habits, right? Guys that can habitually win. There's also guys that somehow find ways to lose. And like you said, you don't want your starting point guard to be the dude that's at the bottom of the list every month. It's going to be a long season.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Last thing before Dougie lands a plane here, biggest gift. And for those of that don't know about your dad, I've known your dad a long time, John Peterson, assistant coach at Cal State Dominguez Hills, but championship at Metro State, along with Coach Mike Dunlap. And it's been one of the best that's flown, I hate to say flown under the radar, but one of the best coaches that people probably don't really know a lot about. But being son of a coach and now becoming a coach with your dad being a coach, what's the biggest gift that he gave you that now is coming to light? Because some of the stuff when you're 14, 15, you're blowing it off. You're saying, Dad, enough already. But now you probably find yourself saying some of the things he used to say. So what's the biggest gift now that you realize you didn't know it then that he gave you?
Like you said, I've grown up around his programs. I think as I've gotten older, the coolest thing is just being able to see the relationships he's built and how they've lasted. Some of his former players are like my older brothers, and just the lasting impact he's had on people's lives. And that's what you're really in it for at the end of the day. So being able to see that and like how there's still guys from 10 years ago are coming back. They're all excited to talk to him. Guys come over for dinner. Being able to see that, it's like, man, I want to build that. I mean, obviously, being able to talk, I talk to him every day about hoops, and he's great to have the advice and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm blessed to have that, but being able to see the way he's built these relationships and maintained them, it's just, oh, man, I really want to recreate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that puts a bow on it right there, man. That's why we do.
You've been given the opportunity, and I'm sure you're doing exactly that. And there's a lot of time left to be able to continue to grow that. So what I'll say and how we'll wrap it is, of course, in season, thank you again for taking some time out of your day. I know this is, I should say, taking time out of your night, because I know we're in a little bit of a time difference. But nonetheless, it's great to be able to hear from you. And I've heard great things from Mage. So it's great to hear your side of things, and especially your young career, being able to see it grow and develop now. I'll be sure to make sure to keep following along. Because it's cool. It's cool to be able to see like somebody as such a young coach who's moved up and then now having a head coaching opportunity. There's a lot of people who'd love to be in your shoes. So it's awesome to be able to see you have risen so far. But obviously looking forward to keeping on and seeing where you go from next. But appreciate you for being on here.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, man. All the best. Keep building it. You're doing it the right way. You're putting the right stuff in the pot. Right. You got a great recipe in terms of the stuff you're trying to build with your team. Like I said, man, year ones go fast. So how you feel 365 days from now is going to feel totally different in a good way. But yeah, keep being yourself, most importantly. So we appreciate you jumping on, brother.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
And thank you all for tuning in to another episode, The Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Coaches, keep working. Someday, maybe you'll be that head coach too. Keep rising. We'll talk to you all soon. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.
coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.